Now, fast cars, beautiful women, and a vodka martini shaken, not stirred. In 7 James Bond movies, Roger Moore played the dashing, tuxedoed British agent 007 who saves the world, gets the girl, and looks fabulous doing it. In his new memoir, Roger Moore writes about his life, from a young boy growing up in London during World War II to how he landed the title role of Simon Templar in The Saint, a role that paved the way for his being cast as James Bond when Sean Connery retired. Roger Moore joins us now. If you want to talk with him about his life or his acting career, as the Saint, as Bond, that's James Bond, give us a call. 800-989-8255. The email is talk@npr.org. Roger Moore is at our New York Bureau. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrea.
We're going to hear a lot of stories this hour about your days as James Bond, but I'd like to go back a little bit to ask you about the role of Simon Templar in the TV show The Saint. When you accepted that part, you thought it would only be one season, maybe two. You had no idea how successful it would become.
I even thought it was only going to be a half-hour series, and the contract actually was drawn up, what I thought, for 39 half-hours, was for 39 hours, and it wasn't until Lou Grade, who was the head of ATV and ITC, was making the press announcement and saying, and we're going to do 39 hours, and I said half hours, and the two producers of the show at that time dragged me to one side and said, it's an hour. And I said, well, I must say I read the script and thought it was awfully long for half an hour. But there we are. The agent who drew up that contract was not my agent for very long.
I see. You write in your book, though, and we should say the title of the book is My Word is My Bond, a memoir. You write in your book that those were very happy days for you on The Saint.
All my days working have been very happy. I just like working. I love the atmosphere of being in a studio or in the theater. I like being with other actors, and I like being with technicians.
And you write that after Sean Connery left the Bond series, you were on the short list, but the part went to George Lazenby?
They'd actually asked after about the fourth, or the fifth, when Sean was getting anxious to make a move, and I'd been approached, and there was a script being prepared, and locations had been searched out in Cambodia, and then all hell broke loose in Cambodia and the film was shelved. And by that time I'd moved on to other things, so George Lazenby came in, did one, and Sean came back, and then Harry Saltzman and Cubby Broccoli approached me.
Let's listen to this scene from The Spy Who Loved Me. You've just met beautiful Russian agent Triple X, played by Barbara Bach.
The lady'll have a Bacardi on the rocks.
For the gentleman, vodka martini, shaken, not stirred.
Touché.
Commander James Bond, recruited to the British Secret Service from the Royal Navy. Licensed to kill, and has done so on numerous occasions. Many lady friends, but married only once. Wife killed.
All right, you've made your point.
You're sensitive, Mr. Bond.
About certain things, yes.
Sir Roger Moore, you say that is your favorite Bond movie. Of the 7 you made, why is that your favorite?
Well, the director, Lewis Gilbert, was the first film I'd made with him, and he was such a funny man. Identical sense of humor to mine, completely off the wall, mad as a hatter. We just had so many laughs making the film. We also had wonderful occasions. We spent the first month shooting rehearsing in Sardinia. I was learning to ride a wet bike, a jet bike that had never been seen on the screen before. And I managed to get paid just to sit in the sun and eat pasta and drink Italian wine. It's not bad.
Not a bad life, it sounds like there. The first film you made, though, of the Bond series was Live and Let Die, an apt title. You had a serious accident during the shooting that sent you to the hospital. What happened?
You always have accidents on Bond films. So, we were rehearsing practicing driving a jet boat. Now, a jet boat, you know, it does 40, 50 miles an hour, 55 or something, and its steering is completely controlled by the power. So if you put the over to the left, the power, you'll make a left, sharp left turn. And the more power you put on, the shorter and quicker the turn. The trouble is, once the power goes, the boat will remain going in the direction you were going when the engine cut out, which is what happened. And somebody had inconveniently left a boathouse on the edge of the bayou that I was supposed to be negotiating, and I went straight into it.
Oh, my goodness.
It was actually lucky that it happened during that sequence, because for the first 10 days I was hobbling around on a stick. But as we were shooting in a boat, I would just hobbled into the boat and sat down.
This question about Live and Let Die from Clayton in Palo Alto, California. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, what was your favorite part of shooting Live and Let Die? Because there's a lot of really cool boat chases.
Well, thank you, Clayton. The boat chases were great fun to do, apart from the time that I smashed my teeth and my knee. But I had a lot of laughs, and particularly I had some very good friends in it. David Hedison, who played Felix Leiter, and Clifton James, who... there were some great characters around in that film.
That's great. And I understand that you, in the love scenes, of course, there were many of them, the love scenes with Jane Seymour, who played Solitaire in the movie, you both had your socks on back there?
Well, when you've been filming in Jamaica in sort of 120 degrees of no shade, and you come back to a cold English stage in the middle of the winter, and the doors have been open on the stage, and then you have to climb into cold bed, no electric blankets, no hot water bottle, just the two of you freezing to death underneath a sheet, trying to look cool. You needed something on your feet to keep them warm.
Somehow I don't understand the glamour of James Bond with his socks on in bed. But let's go to David in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, David.
Hi, Mr. Moore. Sam Moore, it is a really, really pleasure to talk to you.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I'm saying it's a pleasure talking to you, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
I grew up in Kenya, in Africa, and I've been a lover of the James Bond movies. But I particularly remember when I was 12 years old, I remember going to the store. My mother had sent me to the store. But I saw that the Bond movie, For Your Eyes Only, was showing that day. And I decided, instead of buying whatever my mother had sent me, I would walk in and just watch the movie. And when I went back home, I had to explain where the money went to. And I had probably the worst whooping my father ever gave me for all my life. But to this day, I still don't regret it. You know, it's one of the...
Well, I'm very sorry you got a whopping for that. I was in Kenya about 3 months ago, in Nairobi and then the Masai Mara. But in Nairobi, I was visiting some UNICEF projects and also a wonderful place for home for abandoned babies run by the Feed the Children organization in America. I found that part of the trip very, very interesting. The rest, Masai Mara, you know, fascinating with the hippos and the lion and the tiger and the ostriches. Yeah, I had a good time.
Roger Moore, it's so much fun to hear that people all over the world know your work. I wonder what it's like to have had a career with a breadth. You did lots of things, but to be defined by these 7 movies you made. I mean, you are James Bond everywhere you go.
Well, I'm James Bond, except for the people that haven't seen a Bond film before, and the first film they see is with Daniel Craig, and he is going to be the definitive Bond. There are many, many, many people just a little older than I am who there can't be many of those around, I tell you. Who for them, Sean Connery was the definitive Bond. And then there's a whole generation that grew up with Timothy Dalton and with Pierce Brosnan. So it's to be known for something as successful as that after so many years is very gratifying. I'm very happy about it.
Let's take a quick question from Scott in Casanova, New York. Scott?
That's right, Casanova, New York. Sir Roger, it's just a pleasure to talk with you, and allow me to say that for 35 years, since the very early 70s, my family taken my brother and I, my parents, my brother and I, taken us very early age to go see the James Bond movies, and we've gone to see every James Bond movie in the theaters. It's always a family event, and I have to say that you and Sean Connery have defined what it is for who James Bond is, and I will always compare all the future James Bonds to Sir Roger Moore and Sean Connery. And we're going to go see, we're carrying the tradition this Friday, we're going to see the new one that's out. And I can't wait to tell my mom, my dad, and my brother and new family that I got to say that to Sir Roger Moore today. So thank you. You've done a wonderful job portraying James Bond and helped define who he is in our minds.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. That's very kind of you. Somebody yesterday in a radio interview said they compared going to a Bond to be a father and son bonding, and that a boy really came of age when his father said to him, come on, son, I'll take you to see a Bond movie. It never occurred to me before, but it sounds like a very good selling point for my book.
Curtis,
you know, bond with Bond and buy your son or buy your dad Bond's book.
My guest is Sir Roger Moore. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Curtis in Oklahoma City. You have a family tradition as well?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, Sir Roger, the first one of yours that I remember fully seeing all the way through as a kid was your first one, Live and Let Die. And I've always been a big fan of that one.
Thank you.
I had a question. I don't know if this story is true or apocryphal, but I remember reading years ago that your son was asking you if you were tougher than James Bond. And when you said, well, I am James Bond, he goes, no, the real James Bond, Sean Connery.
Yep. That's true. It was
hurt.
My son was 8 years old. I took him to lunch at the White Elephant in London, and he sat there, he looked around the room, and he said, Dad, could you beat up anybody in here? And I looked around. They're all fairly old. I said, yeah, sure I could. He said, what about if James Bond came in? I said, but I'm going to be James Bond. He said, no, I mean the real one, Sean Connery. Now, that son of mine has never grown beyond 3'6". I don't know why. No, he's a nice boy.
I see. How about this call from Ted in Boise, Idaho? Ted, go ahead.
Hi, Sir Roger. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I had a question. I wanted to know if you and Sean Connery and George Lazenby and all the other men who played James Bond ever got together to discuss James Bond and who he was and, that sort of thing.
It's a small club, but a good one, huh? You guys get together?
No, I see Sean from time to time when he's in London. He lives in the Bahamas. I speak to George Lazenby. In fact, I saw him a few months ago. He's a hell of a nice guy. And Timothy Dalton I see when I'm in California. Pierce I haven't seen for a while. And Daniel Craig I actually met for the first time a month ago. We were at the London Palladium celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of Ian Fleming. And that was the first time I met Daniel Craig, and we were sharing a dressing room. And he is one hell of a nice guy.
What do you think of his movies?
I saw Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. I had to buy the DVD. They didn't give me a discount. But I'm only joking. I thought he was absolutely terrific, and I would have been dead after the first 5 minutes of shooting a film with that magnitude of gymnastics that he went through. He's jumping, he's running. I thought he was terrific.
I've read, and we've gotten some emails from listeners. This one from Nathan in Salem, Oregon, that you are disappointed in the turn the Bond series has taken of late, due presumably to Bond's increasingly violent style.
No, this has been sort of a misquote. I was asked by a journalist the other day, was it true that I'd been upset by the violence of such and such a film, which was my last Bond, which was A View to a Kill, and I had got rather lazy and not seen all the dailies, the work we did the day before. And so I missed some of the stuff where there were sort of machine guns and people falling down dead and blood all over the place. And so when I saw the first rough assembly of the film, I was rather shocked that it had taken that turn for violence. But I don't think I'm disturbed by the violence of Casino Royale or what would probably, from what I've seen of Quantum Solace. No, I think it's with the times. You know, it's born identity time with movies. And this is what people are looking for, the nitty-gritty and realistic approach, and I'm sure it's the right one. And I was just looking now at the Hollywood Reporter and looking at the figures from the first weekend opening outside America, mm-hmm. where I think they've notched up $180 million. So I think people around the world are accepting it and liking it.
Have you seen? You haven't seen Quantum of Solace yet?
No. We'd just gone to Paris when it opened in London. My book was being released in Paris, where it's not called My Word Is My Bond. It has to be called Amicalement Vôtre, which was the title of the series I did, The Persuaders, with Tony Curtis.
Ah, I see. Another clever name there. Sir Roger Moore, he joined us from our bureau in New York. His memoir is called My Word Is Bond. And let me say, if I may be so bold, you sound just as dashing now as you ever did, sir. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you very much.
And before we sign off, today we say goodbye to producer Ashley Grashaw. Her work has graced this program for almost 2 years. We wish her well as she returns home to Los Angeles, where she can wear flip-flops year-round. Her energy and enthusiasm will be missed. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Andrea Seabrook.